Welcome to Model Minority Moms, where we talk about the meaning of success in career, family, and life. We are Jeanette Park,
Kate Wong,
and Susan Liu,
Harvard classmates and Asian American working moms who get real about the pressures of fitting in while standing out.
Greetings, greetings, and welcome back to Model Minority Moms. Today we are talking about the thing that we covet the most, which is vacations. But is it really a vacation anymore now that the kids are actually with you too? I remember for me when Marvin and I went on our honeymoon, it was to Spain, and I got an American Express card just so I could get these like points so that we could get in this one hotel. And it was like the thrill was telling everyone at the receptionist, like, we're on our honeymoon, and like see if we could get an upgrade and if we could get all these like really cool things. Like that was traveling pre-kid and going into amazing restaurants and just walking down the street and spinning around and not having to have a care in the world. And now traveling is like, does this place have a changing table? And I'm like, is this my life now? Or like, is it even worth it to go travel? Is the money even worth it given the pain? And so today I want to talk to you all. What's it like now? How has your lives changed now that we're traveling with kids? Should you even do it? And what are the tips that we should all know about so we can make it somewhat more bearable, so much more worth it, and maybe even, dare I say, enjoyable. All right, friends, has traveling changed for you post-kid?
I feel like we need to start off and discuss how big of an impact COVID has had on this, because I feel like, and I think this is where Jeanette's perspective will also be important, because she's the only one who had a kid before COVID and then during COVID, right? Like, for example, I can start off by saying that Nirav and I love to travel a lot, you know, as I'm sure many of our listeners do, before we had kids. And we had fully the intention of traveling with our first daughter, Raya, before she was born. And we bought all of our kid, you know, the car seat, the stroller, everything, with the view of traveling a lot with her the first year, because we had been advised it's easier to travel with them before they can crawl, and also so you can get into the rhythm, et cetera, right? Well, that totally went out the friggin' window. And I feel like we've just struggled to kind of find our footing, you know, as COVID restrictions have lessened. And I feel like a lot of my travel muscles were frozen during that time. So I kind of want to hear from Jeanette, like, because she's the only one of us three that has that before what it was like. And then she had to start reincorporating it, like, right, because her daughter was born during COVID. So I'm curious, Jeanette, can you share your wisdom or experience?
What is it like not to be a pandemic parent? Is it the same or better?
Oh, yeah. And I think it also depends, obviously, on, you know, your COVID philosophy. So just to be transparent, I mean, I think we were fairly in the middle of the road in terms of COVID precautions. Like we wore masks and we took a break from group care and we quarantined for several months. But I will say that my daughter was born in August of 2020, and 2 months after she was born, I had twin nephews who were born. My brother and my sister-in-law had twin nephews down in Los Angeles. And our initial plan was to drive down. After taking a couple of neighborhood trips with my newborn, where we got no farther than a block before having to change her diaper, quickly decided it was not going to work to drive like 1,000 miles with a 2.5-year-old and a newborn. So we flew, you know, we flew in the middle of COVID down to LA.
Pre-vaccine.
So we flew down, but it was going to be like a month-long trip. We were both on parental leave. So we had all this time. We got an Airbnb, a long-term rental, and we didn't see them for like, I think seven or 10 days. We all tested before we got together. So I'll just say that, right? So we did travel during COVID, and I think that's not a decision that everybody would have made. So that's all just to say, I actually don't know if COVID impacted our travel that much, because Ruth first got on a plane when she was 2 months old, and then she's probably taken since then, I don't even know, like maybe like 8 airplane trips, you know? And so... Sorry, Kate. I don't know what to say. I feel like it's been not too different, but I think that might also be because of the timing of when our kids were born and their relative ages, and also the fact that Isaiah was pretty compliant on the whole masking thing. Like, he would just put on a mask, and I was actually really concerned about it because I was reading all these stories of families getting kicked off of airplanes because their two-year-old wouldn't keep a mask on or took it off while taking a sip of apple juice and the flight attendant was freaking out, or even kids with disabilities like autistic children who couldn't keep on masks, you know, whole families just being thrown off the airplane. And I just felt like it would be really scarring for Isaiah to go through that. And so that's what I was most worried about. But actually, he was pretty good about keeping on his mask. And all the flight attendants we interacted with were pretty, I think, understanding and flexible. But otherwise, I don't really feel like it impacted us too much. I mean, you know, the biggest shift for me was going from pre-kid traveling to post-kid traveling, right? What I tell every parent who has a new child who's about to go on their first trip is there's no such thing as vacation anymore. There are only trips where you are with your kid in a place that's not your house, where you don't have all the stuff that you've bought to make your life a little bit easier. And your kid's going to sleep less well. They're not going to eat as well. But you are going to be like in a different place. And that has its own level of kind of rejuvenation. But it's not like you're going to come back and, you know, have this glow thing going on because you were so well rested and you ate so well, blah, blah, blah. Like that's probably not going, like I put my money on that not being the case.
It's the worst thing. Yeah. You come home back from a quote unquote vacation and then you want another vacation. Like,
I'm recovering from vacation is what I tell people after taking a vacation with kids these days.
But then it doesn't make any sense. Like, why even pony up on the money? You know what I mean?
You know, that is a really good question, Susan.
It's funny because like sometimes I've encountered older adults who are like, you know, your kids will never remember that they're on vacation. So it's almost like, why bother? Or you're just doing it for you. But then if you're just doing it for you and you're not really having a vacation, should you really do it? Right. That's sort of like the logic. I try to see this whole thing as a part of like same thing with having kids. Should you have kids or not? Does it make your life worse or better or whatever? It's like an experience, right? A good experience, bad experience, in-between experience. I wouldn't label it like that. It's just, I think the process of schlepping your children or child out from the home, comforts of home somewhere where maybe you're not even getting vacation, it's a learning process. And I say that from personal experience as someone who, because we were, you know, at home for the first 10 months of Raya's life, we didn't take a vacation until she was 10 months old, and that was to Hawaii. I felt so crippled. Like, and this is why I was asking you, Jeanette, if you felt differently, because I felt for me the psychological aspect was really hard. Like, I had been gung-ho ready to go vacation with Raya as soon as she was 2 months old, and then we couldn't. And then by the time, we'd already settled into this really predictable routine. And so it was really, for me, it was the anxiety of trying to get out of that into imagining this different scenario. Ultimately, I felt like it actually was really good for me because it made me less anxious about many things related to travel or, you know, moving Raya from the one environment she'd known since birth to a different environment, right? It is as much for me as it is for her because it helped me overcome a lot of these roadblocks in my mind, which I think a lot of parents have. We have friends who, you know, they didn't travel with their son until he turned 3 because they were so worried about how he would be on the plane. Or how he would be away from his home, right? And I don't want to judge them because I think it is really stressful, the thought of that, right? But I was like, oh man, you know. But maybe if they had thought about it in terms of it's not going to be great, it'll be messy, but like it's a process and we'll learn, and then after that things will get easier, right? And I wish that's something that like more people would talk about and say as opposed to oh you're just going to have a terrible time or like what's the point of even going, right? Instead of being fatalistic, be realistic, but also with like somewhat of a positively realistic edge, which is that you will learn a lot during this process. And it is important, I think, for me after coming through it to learn all of this as a parent. Even it is important for kids if they don't remember anything, going through that experience of traveling, of being in a different context, I'm sure it shapes how they think about things, right? In ways that maybe will endure over time. They won't necessarily have the memories of being in Hawaii or LA or, you know, SF or wherever. Does that make sense? So I just feel like there's a lot of very black and white dialogue about thinking about travel with kids. And this is just how I feel now after, you know, going through COVID travel and traveling with one kid and traveling with two kids.
Yeah, I think the benefits are, you know, the benefits are different. So it's not might not be as restful. But I think, like you said, I experienced the benefit of just breaking out of my routine, actually. And for myself and my mental health, I sometimes have kind of OCD tendencies. And I always notice after I come back from vacation, I have less of those. And I think for my kids as well, they're forced to become more flexible. And then like I find out that actually this thing that I thought that they always needed, like they might actually not need it, right? And so I feel like there's a lot of those types of things that I actually discovered on vacation, which is like, oh, like I don't have to pack a separate blanket for Isaiah anymore. He can just use the blanket at the Airbnb or, you know, or whatever it is, right? Like I don't need to bring the potty seat. And inevitably, there will also be those times where you're just like, oh shit, I didn't bring this thing. I actually still need it. So it's those things mixed together. But I think there was for me a lot of value in just breaking out of the routine for our emotional health, mental health, both for Jake and I. And so, you know, we've chosen to still continue traveling like on a fairly regular basis, even with two children, even recognizing that it is a lot of work. It's not restful. It's basically as restful as staying home with them and doing a regular weekend. But we still feel like the pros outweigh the cons.
I'll insert my renegade minimalist non-traditional voice here. And so you could also travel without the kids. So Marvin had this business trip to London and Brussels. I hadn't traveled internationally for 4 years and I really wanted to go and tag along. And there was a big debate. Should we bring Art or not? It's like 7 days or whatever. And it's like international, going to be a time zone change. Actually, all the care is really going to be on me because Marvin's working. Should we do it? Art is about like 2.5 at this point. And then for me, I'm like, and pay for his ticket too? Like, does that make sense? And so we actually left him with grandma. This is our first international trip without our kid for, you know, a week. And it was great. It was like a second honeymoon. It was what our recharge for our relationship. That's what we needed. Yes, we had a caretaker that Art's very comfortable with, which is his grandma. And it was awesome. But I guess it's like we did the calculation and there came a point where we're like, it's not going to be worth it for us. And so we actually opted not to take him, which was a choice that we made. And, you know, by the time day 6 or 7 came around, we were like, okay, time, ready to go home. We miss him. But also we felt recharged. So I'm just putting that out there too, which is like, you don't always have to take them. But, you know, I've taken Art on a couple of trips before, some a little crazy, like the one time I decided to take just me and him to California with no car seat and only one checked bag for the both of us, just to see if I could do it and to see if I could just reduce schlepping stuff around. It was successful. But at the same time, I was like hot and sweaty and miserable because I like really minimized the number of things we brought. So I think it's like there's a spectrum of like, okay, we're going to go on a trip. How much comfort do you want on the trip? You know, and then also I think for me, what I need to do is really level set on expectation. Like, what am I trying to get out of the trip? Like if it's like, oh, I want to bring him to California so he can visit all his cousins, his 6 cousins, because we don't want to have a second kid. And I want him to have some kind of like extended clan mentality. Cool. What am I going to expect out of that? Like, what am I going to see as fun? And I think like, for me, I don't ever consciously think about my expectations. And usually they're sorely met. And then I'm like pretty frustrated and pissed most of the time. So I think for me, I need to like lower my expectations more. And I remember my sister, I was hanging out with all the family. We have this like annual sleepover called Extreme Indulgence. It's like a 5-day sleepover for like 20 people, all the kids, all the siblings. And I was like, okay, today we can do these 3 activities, morning slot, afternoon slot, evening slot. And like all the parents, this is when I was pre-kid, all the parents looked at me and they were like, one activity max. You don't understand.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I understand. Like, let's just make it happen. Like, we just, because for me, I saw it as like group malaise, like group. Groups like move really slow and like, we just need to get motivated. And they looked at me and they were like, you don't understand. And now I wish they just could have explained it to me about, I don't know, nap schedules and diapers. They just said, you don't understand. And that was the end of it. But now I'm just kind of like, okay, well, how do we just bank on one activity being fun? And then anything else that happens and any other crises that come up, they're going to come up and we're just going to deal, right? And flow with it. Marvin's always, because we're mountaineers and we do a lot of crazy outdoor stuff that I don't want to do anymore. He's always like, it's all about improvising. Just improvise. Don't get so hung up on the planning. So I'm curious with you all, like, where do you set your expectations? And how much do you actually plan for, like, I want it to be like a really interesting trip and I want the kids to have new experience and like swim with dolphins. Like how much are you trying to like make it, trying to give them like really interesting life experiences versus just like, what am I going to do that's fun for me? What's my one thing? Like, are you even thinking about that or no? Of like, how are you going to have fun?
Well, I'm a planner, you know, to a fault. And this was true even pre-kid. You know, I have a spreadsheet. I have a series of spreadsheets of all of our trips over the years where sometime before the trip, usually the process between Jake and I is we will talk about potentially taking some trip. One day Jake will tell me, oh, you know that trip we decided to take? I booked tickets. And I would be like, okay. And then the trip date will be getting closer and closer and there's no hotel, no rental car, no activities, no restaurants. So then I will put together a spreadsheet of all the days we are there. That's down the first column. And then it's activity, meals, notes. Those are usually my columns. And then I will start filling them out like, okay, this is how we're going to get to the Airbnb. This is where we're staying. This is like, you know, five choice of restaurants in that area that are things that I would be excited to eat. You know, here are some potential activities. So I still do that with kids, but I think the shift has been more like, well, there's just more logistics involved, right? So now there's a packing list. And then there's also usually a grocery list because now we usually only stay at Airbnbs. And I will usually put in the Whole Foods order to arrive the day after we get there with snack foods and breakfast foods, just so that we have something in the house, even if we are eating out as well. But I'll still make my list of restaurants to get takeout from, activities. And usually there will just be one activity per day. You know, usually in the morning, it'll be like, get up, breakfast, try to get out of the house, go do that activity, come back or have lunch out, rest time back at the Airbnb, maybe some TV time, and then maybe we take a walk, dinner, and then bedtime.
You're like Rick Steves, but for families. Like, you could do like family trips.
Yeah, I guess something like that. And, I don't know if I'm missing something about your question, but it's always some combination of connection with family or friends in that area, something that's really interesting or fun, or some kind of experience that's different from what we could do at home. And I think a lot of the activities we're doing together as a family are pretty kid-centered. But in recent years, especially as we've had an au pair join our family, what's been nice is that we could also ask the au pair to watch the kids more, let's say for a couple afternoons while we're on the trip, so that Jake and I could also have some adult time where we could go to a coffee shop or we could go to an art gallery or we could do something that the kids wouldn't want to do or it would be hard to do with them. So we've incorporated that, and I think it's made vacation a lot more pleasant. Of course, it costs more money because you need to have that additional help. But once you commit to having an au pair, like, the marginal cost is essentially zero, right? So in that way, it makes it a little bit easier.
How is the marginal cost essentially zero?
Oh, because you are already committed to paying the au pair for a certain amount, right, for the whole year. So as long as you're not exceeding the number of hours of work that they can do, you're not paying extra to say, like, oh, can you watch the kids for 2 hours? So you don't have to make that calculation of, oh, it's going to cost $60 to whatever, or $100 to have the babysitter come and all the logistics of them coming back and forth. So yes, additional expense, but it does make the trip, I think, more enjoyable and less of this feeling like, oh, it's just the whole thing, sometimes it feels like an ordeal, like it's just so kid-centric and there was nothing about it that was rejuvenating for me personally or me and Jake as a couple.
Yeah. I was supposed to, for Christmas, go on a 7-day cruise with my family to Mexico. In Seattle, we had ice storms. So like the flights the day before were all canceled and my flight on Christmas Eve got canceled. So we didn't go. But why am I bringing this up? Oh, yeah. We were only going to go on the cruise because it was about change of expectations, which is for extreme indulgence. I didn't want to cook or clean for anybody anymore because that is not restful to me. But also we knew that Art would have the time of his life on the cruise. There's like kids camp and like water slides and like all this stuff. And we just accepted it that this was about him. Like, we wouldn't choose to go on a cruise, right? And then that's it. And that's what we're going to do. So I think sometimes for certain trips, Marvin and I just kind of we just kind of get really clear about what this is about. And then that helps me kind of like accept all the things about it.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot about parenthood, but traveling more specifically is about just setting the right expectations. You have to have like more realistic expectation, I think, to be able to enjoy it and appreciate the parts that are actually good instead of only being able to see the parts that are hard, you know, and less fun.
Can I tell you something morbid I do? Oh, go for it, Kate.
Oh, no. Do your morbid thing. I want to hear your morbid thing.
My morbid thing is sometimes hang out with family. Like, it's like a really important value of mine that Art knows his extended family because they all live in the Bay Area. I live in Seattle and they're far away. And so, but then my family will inevitably annoy me or like, my idea of a good time is like a vulnerable conversation over sparkling wine, you know, and Marvin's like, why does everything have to be vulnerable? Why do people have to cry all the time? And I'm like, it's not that. I just really want to know how people are doing. And that's not what people are interested in with me, my family. They don't want to have those conversations. And so over time, I've had to calculate the number of times I'm going to see a certain person again before I die on average. If they die around 70 or I die at 70, whether that's in-laws, parents, whatever, I need to calculate the number of times I'm going to see them again and then say, it's just about, because I want it to be quality time, but it's not actually quality time for me. I feel like sometimes everyone's just on their phones and not interacting. And I'm like, this, why are we even doing this? But my mantra is just like, just enjoy the time we have. You know, so I'm trying to strip away the words quality and like meaning. Is that terrible? Is that morbid? Do you do that when you think about traveling for family or with family?
Not explicitly, but that's good advice because I just traveled with my mom recently and it was semi-stressful for me and I got really annoyed by certain things. But it's good to put that in perspective, Susan.
Right, because you also brought your mom too because you were like, oh, another pair of hands, right, to help with the vacation. And then it was like the inevitable dynamic of your relationships with people.
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of veering into a different topic, right? But I think even in relationships, like expectation setting, right, realistic expectation setting is something I've come to embrace more. And that you just have to decide, right, like given what this is realistically going to be, whether it's a trip or time you spend with somebody, you have to decide if you're going to do it or not, right? But I think the harder thing is if you have this more like idealistic expectation of what you wish will happen, and then you go into it and you're inevitably disappointed, right? Then it's really hard. So I don't know. I think this is a different episode because I think it's just like this tension of how high should you hold the bar? And it applies to, I think, more broadly than trips. It applies to relationships. It can even apply in your career, I think, and just like a number of things in your life. But
dinner prep,
yeah. But I think I've just kind of tried to be more aware of what's my idealized expectation versus what's the realistic expectation, right? And maybe not try to lose my idealistic expectation altogether, like acknowledge that it's there and something that would be great if it happened, but also just to say, you know, that's probably not going to be what actually happens. So what's the gap between what will actually happen? What do I want to happen? Is that gap, you know, can I narrow that gap? And if I can't, then is this still worth doing, right?
I will say I really love it when I have a therapist appointment right before a big trip, because then she helps me process these questions. Because I feel like if I don't intentionally ask these questions, then I kind of just like get in the flurry of like, I got to pack. We got to make the flight. And then I don't actually really think about the gap and think about like, basically, you want to come back home and be like, that was fun. Right. Like that was worth it. Or I'm glad we did it. Right. And I think part of it is this very nuanced exercise that does it just seems like, well, why am I going to do it? But I think it's really key. It's really key.
I think I want to use the example of two trips that I took with kids to sort of illustrate the big difference that everything we've been talking about, expectations, setting, checking in with yourself, and like just a change in mindset makes for like whether
ex post facto one feels the trip was pleasant slash a success or not, right? From the adult perspective. And the first trip is the one that I took when Lila was 6 months with her and just her and me to Paris. It was interesting because when I announced that to, you know, my mom friends, including you guys, most people were like, oh my gosh, that's so brave of you. How, like, wow. Like, you know, people were kind of shocked for the most part that I would take a baby by myself to a very far away place that's 9-hour flight by myself. And so that's like the looking outside in, right? But from my inside looking out, the reason why I felt good about it was because one, I was going to a place that I lived in, staying with a friend, Apollonia, who I know listens to our podcast. Hi, Ap. And because I'd been to Paris so many times, to me, it's like a second home. I don't really need to do the touristy things. I don't have an agenda. It was for me to just really get out of America for the first time in 3 years, hang out with one of my besties and, you know, bring my baby because I was nursing her. I still am at the time. And that made sense, right? And so that's my attitude going in. I didn't have a specific agenda. I had things I wanted to buy, right? Because the euro was so low. Still is.
And the shoes you came back with the stars are so cute.
I know. They're very cute. Exactly. So I was like, I'm just going to eat, shop, and hang out with Apollonia. That's it, right? And so I went in with that attitude. I had a really great experience with Air France. I think, you know, honestly, there are some airlines that are just friendlier than others for flying with kids. People want to think about that. I also had a separate seat, you know, for the baby, which I think made a big difference. I bought
6 months.
Miles. Yeah, at 6 months, but I bought with miles. So I bought tickets with miles. So I think that was really big. And then, you know, what did I spend the whole time doing? Exactly what I set my expectations to, which is I ate a lot. You know, I knew the neighborhood really well. I was staying with my friend. You know, she works really hard. So like sometimes I'd just be hanging out waiting for her to show up. Like, you know, I'd push the baby around, go to places, do some shopping. It was just really, it was like having a staycation, but just in a different location, right? And I felt that was perfect for this specific situation. And I came back feeling pretty good. I mean, was I kind of exhausted from schlepping a baby around? Yes. But, you know, I was under no pretenses that I would just be like, you know, having a spa vacation, right?
I mean, kid was 6 months. Doesn't know the word no. Doesn't have any opinions.
Sounds good. So I could go wherever I wanted to go, right?
Correct. But here, how did you deal with time zone change and nap schedules? Like, was that all messed up? Or
yes.
Oh, you were going with the flow.
Well, the backstory is that, you know, Lila's always been a really sensitive sleeper. So she was only ever sleeping in 2-3 hour increments anyway. So I felt like, what's the worst case scenario? We just like go to sleep later, get up earlier. And yeah, for the first few nights, she was definitely up a lot in the middle of the night, but we just slept in, right? And I think this is the thing where I'm going to get a little existential. I think our generation is so focused on finding the right product, the right approach, the perfect solution for every micro scenario that I think sometimes we get really caught up and frozen in. Things have to be a certain way. What if the kid's like nap schedule gets off? What if this gets ruined? What if that gets ruined? Well, guess what? That's just real life. Because if you want to live real life, which is if you want to travel and do the things that you did before a little bit, you're going to just have to kind of roll with it, right? And I feel like one of the things that our generation lacks is just the ability to, when we have kids, to kind of roll with things and just parent like with our intuition, right? Which is that like, then I didn't have Lila on a specific schedule. I was just like, is she sleepy? Okay, great. Like, let me push her out for a stroller nap. Is she up in the middle of the night? Okay, I guess we'll sleep in. So we slept until like 9:30, you know, most nights. And then she would get fussy maybe around 8 or 9 p.m. After the first couple nights, I realized I can't have her out in a wine bar at like 9 p.m. because she'll just be screaming her head off. So I wasn't in a wine bar at 9 p.m., you know, like thereafter. So it's just adjusting to things. These are things that, like, if I Googled that, I wouldn't be able to find that information, right? Because this is my child. Like, I know her and I know her rhythms. And if I'm attuning in to what she's telling me, like, that's how we got things figured out.
Do you think in this era of, like, where people have talked about schedules and read books about it and, like, where in a way it like has all the research and all the philosophies, is it our detriment now? Because like we like.
Yeah. And actually, by the way, it's not research based. In fact, a lot of these so-called, and this is a totally another episode, but I do feel like a lot of these setting a specific hard schedule, like even the wake window thing is kind of a false. It's not necessarily supported by actual research. It's just basically think of babies as adults, right? If they're sleepy, they're sleepy. If they're not sleepy, they're not sleepy. Like, just cue into them. You know what I mean? That's just the general philosophy I used on that trip. I mean, with the general idea of like, I know around this age, she should be awake for maybe this long, but hey, if she's not, probably jet lag. I wasn't stressing out over it. And I do know that with my first baby, I got so stressed out if I was like, oh my God, it's like 2 minutes past her wake window. Oh my God, I need to get her down for a nap. You know, and like I just couldn't have made that trip with my first daughter.
because I was just so obsessed. So there's no judgment there. I think I'm releasing whoever, if you're listening to this and you feel like you need to like hew to all these things, if you want to have like a decent time on your vacation, you have to let that go. I honestly think. Because yeah, a lot of Instagram influencers are showing you tips and tricks on how to, you know, travel with the baby while keeping their like wake window and doing, but honestly, you don't know what their real life looks like. You don't know what their baby's like. And you know what? They don't know what your baby is like. They don't know what your kid is like. And so I feel like as, especially as moms, because we spend the most time, generally speaking, with our children, like let's trust our mom intuition more. Right? Like that's what I learned from that trip with Layla. And that's why I came back and I had a great time. I told everybody, yeah, I had a great time. Was it like vacation I would normally take? No. But did I enjoy it? Yes. Sorry, that was a really long example, but I felt like it was important to share that.
Wait, totally. Did you have a second trip?
Yes. So the second trip that was not so great was actually, ironically, was with my mom and my nanny and my husband and both of our kids. So it was a 2-to-1 adult to child ratio when we went to Hawaii, which by the way, is really great. And we're very lucky to have that, right? And same thing with you, Jeanette. It's like, well, we're paying the nanny anyway, so might as well just kind of bring her on the trip, right? Like, I think the reason why that trip was hard is because I'd never taken a trip with like extended family, like that, right? Where you have not just the kids, but also like my mom, who, you know, she and I have this dynamic. Love my mom, but she also is like such a freaking nagger, like every nag. She did not stop that on the vacation. And even our nanny will like sometimes be like this, that. So I had to keep, you know, these two people in Chinese in the background. And Nirav, that he couldn't deal with them because he doesn't speak Chinese, right? He's not getting like all the input in Chinese from these older Chinese ladies. And then the logistics for, you know, four adults, two children. Plus, we were traveling with friends who sometimes had different ideas of what they wanted to do, which we hadn't really done that with kids either. So there were just too many new things. My advice would be don't insert too many new variables into your travel scenario when you are traveling with kids. I think that was the thing that I didn't really think about and take into consideration. And so I was like on edge, anxious, like pissed off, as Jeanette knows, because I wrote her kind of a mean email during vacation. I was just so annoyed all day long because I just had to like deal with all this new stuff. And then Nir was like, that was the worst vacation ever. And we like had so many arguments and we had to debrief after we came back, you know. And so I would say the lesson from that is just, yeah, don't try too many new things. Just really think about your triggers, right? Like we could have definitely brought my mom, but I think I would have really had to rethink like, how would we have structured the vacation with my mom, with whom I have a dynamic, right?
Yeah. I think the other thing in that scenario, and you can tell me from your experience going through it, whether this resonates with you, it strikes me as difficult to be both the lead parent on the trip. So, you know, being attuned to what your kids need minute by minute, and then also effectively kind of be like a group leader. Right. For, you know, for yourself, Nirav, like, you know, nanny, mom, your kids and potentially this other family, like that is too much for one person to handle. You know what I mean? And I don't know if you were thinking about that before going in, but I think just listening to you talk about the trip, I'm like, oh, that's a lot, because actually in that scenario, it might be even hard to just go with the flow more, because when you have a big group of people, like they actually need a leader and they need some kind of schedule to coordinate around, right? Like when you have a lot of people involved, it is harder just to go with the flow because it's like this morass, right? And people are kind of looking to one person to set the rhythm. But it's hard when that's the mom of two young kids because she has a lot of other shit she needs to be doing.
It's work.
Yeah.
It is work. I think you're right, Jeanette. Like, I think in that case, we didn't clearly delineate the roles. So I ended up doing everything by default, but then I was just pissed at everybody all the time because, I mean, literally, you know, I had to attend to so many different things. And it was like, oh, we didn't get to spend quality time on the vacation. I'm like, yeah, because I was busy either recovering from like doing everything or like just busy worrying about when we would get our next, you know, meal. Yeah. And so we are taking, I love this family that we travel with. We're actually taking another vacation with them, but this time I'm letting them decide. They're making all the dinner reservations. They're like deciding where we want to. I'm like, cool, you guys take that. I'm just going to take care of my kid
And like, you know, just because they like that, right? And they're really good at it. It like gives them a thrill, and they're very efficient at
do
it.
Do they have kids too?
Yes, they have kids. Okay, exactly, so they get it. Our okay. same age. They get it. But somehow they're just really efficient, and they just like doing that, like making the reservations. They have opinions about it. I'm just like, I realize when you vacation with another family, as a side note, I don't know. I mean, you both have vacationed with other families. It's just, I feel like too many cooks in the kitchen just ruins it for everybody. And so I just am happy to defer the decision-making to them. I know, as an OCD person who like used to always plan like all the food places on her trip, that is very hard, but yeah. I have to put that down. Like, you just have to make a choice. And after this last vacation, I was like, Kate, you can't have everything. Just the food piece, they love it. They're good at it. Just leave it to them. So that's the new learning from this next vacation. I'll let you guys know next trip.
I mean, I've always heard of families being really into the all-inclusive resort, because then you make less decisions and things are provided for you. Have either of you ever done that?
Oh, like, my God, that was the other lesson. Yeah. Sorry, that's the other lesson we learned from this time in Hawaii, right? So we were there for 2 weeks, but we lived in three different locations, two Airbnbs and like a resort. And Nerv afterwards was like, that was our capital mistake. Like, because we wanted to stay in a charming part of the Big Island, like where there are really only Airbnbs. And then we arrived earlier than our friends. I mean, disaster. The lesson is, with kid, just pick one place. Just stay in that one place, preferably if you have either the resources or whatever. All inclusive is great, because Nerva's like, look, we could have spent the same amount of money, maybe stayed in the Big Island for 6 days, but then our whole experience would have been much more streamlined, much easier than what we experienced, right? And so that's the other thing, is I think I bit off ambitiously more than we could chew, because we'd only ever been to the Big Island either by ourselves or with one kid. And it's just with a group of six. Plus another friend, that's not how it works, right? And so, yes, to reply to yourself, Susan, we have not done the all-inclusive resort thing, but next time, I think that's what we're going to do if we go to tropical locale, just for my, like, mental health.
You know, and that's maybe why cruises are appealing to family. You know, there's just, like, if you come with multi-generational family, everyone's has different preferences with eating, when they eat, what they like to do for fun. Maybe that's cool. For my family, Marvin is not a beach vacation kind of guy. He is not. He doesn't like it. He wants things to like be hard, you know, like he's like, do we climb a glacier? Why have a gondola when you can just hike up the mountain? You know, and I'm like, what? Like, why be cold? Why work? Like, why sweat? Like, I just want my chili cheese fries, you know, in the lodge. So he has a different sense of what fun is to him. And so it's kind of like, I've never even entertained these all-inclusive resorts, but I think we found a maybe happy medium this summer, which I'm excited to try out. We are very happy YMCA members. Okay. We are.
YMCA?
Yeah.
Did you say YMCA?
Yeah, YMCA. Say what you will about that organization, but they have like daycare included in our YMCA so that we can work out and not worry about it. They also have an extended cabin system that they have family programming for like 3 or 5 days for weekends. And then they do all the food. There's activity set up. You're in a cabin. There's scholarship for low-income families. Like, everyone can attend. I'm kind of excited about that, because our mistake was we took Art when he was maybe like 1 year old to Mount Rainier to go camping in a tent while he was teething, while he was still sleep training in a tent. Did I mention we were in a tent, like in like a drive-in area where there's other people? And did you know tents are not soundproof? We had this idea to be there for 2 nights, and we only stayed 1 night because he was 1 year old. And then Marvin's like, oh, maybe that wasn't a good idea. I'm like, yeah, maybe that wasn't a good idea. Because, I mean, like, the baby is now in this like really small space, which is a tent, right? Like, I'm just like, what are you doing? And he was like, oh, we'll just put Art in the tent and we can hang out by the fire. I'm like, what are you talking about? Anyways, so it didn't work out. And since then, like, the Washington State Park System has a whole bunch of cabins and yurts that you can rent that have electricity in them. It's drive up, you know, and like Marvin's like, ew, poo poo, car camping. Like, let's go on like a 6-day backpacking thing where we do like alpine rock climbing. I'm like, Art is still a child and he can only walk for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So we're trying to do something in between, which is like, okay, how can we do more either car camping where we have walls so we're not disturbing other people? We have some amenities. A pack and play can fit there. You know, like, we can plug in a sound machine.
that would be nice, right? We have internet access. So that's the route that we're starting to explore a little bit, which is like, are there, and I don't want to organize the arts and crafts. I don't want to organize the s'mores. I just want someone to do it for me because it's just one less thing to think about. Or if I do it with a group of families, like, I don't know. We're trying to merge our interests of the outdoors and like do something that's more realistic for us. So I'm actually all about the yurt system because I think they're very affordable and they have soundproof mostly walls. But that's us.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, go for it.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I think we are moving towards that as well. When we get together with extended family, you know, and there's like lots of cousins and stuff, then first it was just like Airbnbs, but then now we've started getting just food made because, yeah, cooking and cleaning after that many people is just a lot of work. And most of us still have young children to look after. But I think the next step is I've started researching camps like that, YMCA style camps where, you know, you just pay one fee and it's like maybe not a luxurious resort, but there's a cabin with beds and there's a canteen where they'll make all your food. And yeah, there's activities. I think like the whole planning and coordinating stuff, it's as well as the physical work of cooking, washing, peeling, chopping, sauteing, cleaning, blah, blah, blah. Like that is, it's so much work. It's not discussed, but it is. And if it's, yeah, you only miss it when it's not there, right? And so we've started looking at those places because I think it'll just make our time together easier and more enjoyable for everyone.
Mm. And totally. To it, like Jeanette's checklist, you know, this last time we booked two Airbnbs. The Airbnb we stayed in before our friends arrived had a dishwasher, which is great when you have like six people. But then we shared a ginormous Airbnb with our friends and neither of the units had dishwashers. And you just are like, it's such a small, simple thing, right? But when you're like, when you're eating breakfast at home with like many people.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so I would suggest like a la Jeanette, like write down a list, a checklist of all the things that you need in a specific type of resident, like residence, right? So that you don't even think about it. Like if you're staying in an Airbnb, it has to have A, B, C, D, F, G, right? If you're staying at a hotel, it has to have A, B, C, D, F, G, like all these things. Because like, we just like both families are like, oh, duh. Like next time we never want to go to a place that doesn't have, you know, a dishwasher. Thank goodness it had washer dryer, but like, you know, things like that where, you know, you can just kind of no brainer it next time.
Well, I think this is a great transition to just like tips, like of just like packing and like getting on and off the plane or in and out of the car. Are there things that help you make this less stressful? Jeanette, did you say you have a list for trips? And like, tell me about your process again.
Yeah, I use two different spreadsheets. So one is just the trip planning, like every day, just like what's the main activity? What's our transport situation? What's our lodging situation? What are the restaurant options in that area? And then I usually have on the bottom a grocery list too, and that covers breakfast and snacks. And the day before we leave, I'll put in a Whole Foods order to be delivered to the Airbnb that day or the day after that. I think for me, it's just really stressful for it to be like 12:30 p.m. and your kids being starving. And then having gone to like a 2.5-star restaurant that's right near the museum. And then you like just find out right afterwards that there's actually a much better place, like half a block away. So that's just me because food is very important to me, but I like to just do a little bit of that research ahead of time and just know what the options are. So that's one spreadsheet. And then I have a packing list for both of my kids. It's pretty exhaustive. And for me, it just reduces the mental load of having to think through every time anew, like, what do I need to bring for them? And I have this on Google Drive and I print it out every time we are getting ready to go on a trip. And I just cross out everything that doesn't apply for that trip. And then sometimes I will ask the au pair to do some of it. I just give her a part of the list and say, please pack these things. And then I will go and pack some of the other things. So yeah, that's another tool that I use. But I have some like other travel tips that, I don't, do you want me to just share them now or?
Yeah, let's shoot them.
I think the other adaptation that we've made is we just bring for the smart carts at the airports. We never used to. $5, like totally worth it rather than having your kid run around on the parking lot because you have no hands to carry them or hold their hand. We get them every time. But I will also make the caveat that some airports do not they won't always have the smart cards available. And they also won't let you take them to certain areas of the airport, like to the all the way to the rental car station. So the other thing that I do is just kind of think through, okay, how many adult hands are there? And how could you carry the luggage in a way where you have all the kids and all the luggage, right? So because you might, there might be certain distances that you have to cover where you have to do it without a cart.
Let me interject on smart carts here. It's always my personal game not to pay for a smart cart. So Marvin says, okay, I'm going to set, we get down to the baggage claim area. You're still waiting for your baggage, right? And then he's like, you have 5 minutes. And then so he sets a timer for 5 minutes. And then I start running around the airport, going out to like the curb area where people would be picked up, right? Or even walking across the street into the parking lot area and just finding a free cart. He only gives me 5 minutes because then he's like, lady, come on, let's just pay for it. But I get a thrill out of it. So I'm just saying, you know.
You guys are so funny. Yeah, no, we just like, we're just like, okay, smart card available, $5. Okay, let's just do that.
Correct. But I'm just saying it could be a fun game. Keep going.
Those are probably the main things. We usually have been staying at Airbnbs rather than hotels just because having access, easy access to washer, dryer, a kitchen is more, has become more important to us with children. And, you know, and then there's like other small things, but I think those are the main considerations or the main tools that I've been using, you know, since for the last like now almost 5 years, I guess, since Isaiah was born.
And are you always checking in a car seat? I feel like that's always a big, you know, thing.
Yeah, this is one change that we are making, which is just getting a travel car seat that's lighter because we have those really bulky car seats that we use in our regular, you know, workhorse car. And they're just really heavy to carry. So we've been borrowing a travel car seat from a friend and then also renting one at the car rental place. But I think we will just go ahead and get our own travel car seat because, you know, they add a lot of bulk and they're also not easy to carry. Like they don't stack very well. But yes, we will usually check them. I don't think we've ever tried to do the thing, Susan, that you did, which is go to a place without any car seats. Like, I just don't think we could do like. It would just not, for us, I don't think it would be worth it.
Granted, it was a one-time experiment and I will never do it again, but it was thrilling to see if I could do plane, bus, and train. Okay, so is there a certain brand for that travel car seat that you like?
No, maybe Kate could give us a recommendation, but nothing that really stands out to me because like I said, I haven't purchased one yet.
We use the very popular one called Costco Sonera Next. You can buy it at Walmart for $50. It's pretty highly rated for safety, super light. And there are actually many ways you can hack it using luggage straps to tie it to your existing stroller, even if it's not explicitly compatible with the car seat. So we did that when we went to Hawaii with Raya. We took her baby Zen Yo-Yo. We put the Costco Sonera using luggage straps. We tied it around. There's like, if you just Google hacks, there are results that can tell you how to do that. And that way it gets you to take the car seat and the stroller to gate check together. And then you can just gate check that. So we try not to, although I guess, you know, it's a cheap car seat. So we've occasionally checked it in, but if we don't have to check it in, we avoid that. That's, you know, one of our yeah. hacks.
I mean, I will say like if Marvin and I are going on some kind of like extensive, like mountaineering skiing kind of thing, we will drive up to the curb for curb check-in to drop off all the stuff and then drive to the parking lot, park our car, and then come back on the shuttle. Like sometimes it's just logistically easier. So that's something to consider. Like that's where I'll be like, I will tip the person and give them the money because trying to lug it yourself is with the kid and the car seat. It's just too much. Kate, diapers. What's your thing on diapers?
Well, I was going to say a couple of my travel hacks that I learned on the internet. I don't take credit for any of these. Is one, I put both of my kids in overnight diapers in the airport right before they go on the plane. So that barring a poop, which is entirely possible depending on the length of the flight and your child's digestive tendencies, I don't have to change their diaper for the whole flight because overnight diapers have lots of extra absorbency. And both of my children require standing up diapering starting from the time they were 6-7 months. And so I don't like to change diapers in the toilet, in the airplane, because it is disgusting and they move so much that I don't know, what if one of them falls into the toilet? Anyway, so that's my hack. And I read, if any of you guys know Eva Chen, the Instagram influencer who works at Instagram. I mean, she's not an influencer. She's a partnerships person who works in Instagram. She dresses her children in the most brightly colored clothing available so that at the airport, when they run around, she can, you know, buy them. What I do is I dress my kids in matching pajamas last time. So, you know, I can. And oh, that's the other hack is that, hey, if you're going to take a more early morning flight, just dress your kids in pajamas or whatever clothes they're going to be wearing onto the flight. Don't have to wrestle them into like new clothes when they wake up. Just roll them into the car seat in whatever they're wearing. That really helped for my Hawaii trip because we had like an 8 a.m. flight. I had to get up at like 5 a.m. So those are my, you know, hacks. And then the other hack that I discovered recently is, you know, if you own a wagon, like a, not a Volkswagen, but like a kid's wagon, there are many different models. We usually take ours because you can gate check it like a stroller. Most wagons are able to be gate checked. And, but when you get to the airport, you just throw all your shit in it. You can throw the kid in it too. But it's like just a really easy way of lugging around luggage without, you know, a smart cart or just in general, just frees up extra hands, right? So that's another hack.
You also send diapers to the place you're going to stay at.
So, you know, no one wants to schlep like many diapers. If you're traveling in the United States or traveling to a place that, you know, you can reasonably access diapers, even in Europe, like in Paris, I just brought along enough diapers for the first day for Leela. And I brought her overnight diapers because I wasn't sure if I could find those in Paris. And they're not that many. And then I just popped into the Monoprix, which is like a Target equivalent in Paris, bought diapers. Or in the U.S., I just Amazon Prime diapers to the destination like I do for a lot of domestic trips. So
I love that. I was counting, like, I'm going to estimate 5 per day, and I put them in giant Ziploc bags. And like, and so it was just taking up luggage space and we had to carry it. So I really like that idea. Let's talk about when they're on the airplane seat and they're wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Like, are you doing screen time? What's your how do you keep them occupied and not like running up and down the aisles and like touching everybody? And how do you also keep them from crying? Because Lord knows we want to be that parent where people are glaring at us.
So my personal screen policy is, it has been, I'm sure it'll change, you know, as everything does. But screen policy is if you're sick or we're traveling, I don't put any restrictions on screen time. So if we're traveling, I try not to like have them just be staring at the screen for hours and hours. Like I do ask them to take a break and maybe do something else in between, but I don't put like a hard stop on a screen time. So, you know, if we're like on a long flight, maybe they do like one show and then I'll bring out a book and we can read a book before they go on to their next show. But I'll also bring like books that they like and some small toys that they haven't seen before or they haven't played with for a long time that are just small and portable. My daughter really likes the little Playmobil people and we'll do little dioramas or little stories, you know, with the dolls. And she really loves that. I have also brought those silk scarves, play scarves in the past that are really light and portable. And you can also just squish them into a very small space.
And wait, what are you doing? You're just like, are you...
We kind of hide. We play peekaboo under them, or they can become like beds for the dolls or blankets for them, or we can put them on our heads and play dress up. There's so many things you could do with them, or just be under them and just look up at the lights. Like, I mean, so that's something that my kids have enjoyed.
Nice. Any other tips?
I would say with crying, you know, I remember reading this piece of advice. I can't even remember where, before traveling with Raya for the first time when she was 10 months. And the mom said, look, your kids are going to cry on a flight, most likely. And they're just kids, especially babies. There are a lot of new things for them, a lot of things for them to process. So they said, yes, it's tempting to feel anxious because you don't want to ruin the trip for other people. But if you keep focusing on what other people are thinking of you and your crying baby, you will feel even worse. So the advice was just focus on your child. Try to get, you know, focus on your connection with them and on getting them calm. If they're crying, screaming, you know, just don't think about anybody else. Just think about them because you don't need one more source of anxiety to make you more upset in that moment, right? And so, yeah, I try to practice that. It's not always easy, right? Because sometimes you just have that annoying person who's like staring at you like in an accusing manner because you have a crying, shrieking baby who won't calm down. And so I guess just thinking about that, though, like mantra, just, you know, focus your baby, don't worry about everybody else, has helped me a lot. And then also like this last time, you know, Leela was fine when she was 6 months old for her flight. And even at 8 months, she wasn't too fussy. But at 9 months, like the takeoff and landing were really hard on her. And so she was crying a lot. And, you know, there were a couple of nice moms who were like, you know, I remember that age. They're like, it's hard. You're doing a good job. And I appreciated that. Right. And so, you know, if you want to say that to a mom who's struggling, that's great. That's just, you know, my tip is
basically fuck everybody else if they're going to like be really pissed at you, especially those people who are single and have never had kids. You know what the worst though? The old people who have had kids, but somehow they forgot how hard it is to have young kids and they send you like judgmental look. Those are the worst. Sorry, old people, but you should know what it's like to have kids, but you forgot. That's it.
Selective memory.
Exactly. All right. So let's wrap it up with some inside thoughts here. I'm curious about each of you. We've talked about the burden of traveling with family and being the lead and like making it great for everybody else. And it's exhausting. So I'm curious, what is your ideal trip if you went on something by yourself? What would you find totally relaxing and enjoyable for 4 days all to yourself? Because the care is taken care of at home and you have no responsibility. Like, what would you do for fun for 4 days? For me, I would probably be in a silent meditation retreat. Food's made for. I don't have to do anything. And I sleep like really early and it's like I go on runs. I'd go on a silent meditation retreat. That's what I would do for my vacation ends very low cost. Jeanette, what would you do?
I was just making a face like, that's interesting. Did not think of that. The first thing that came to mind was I would go to the south of France all by myself. And I think it's just perfect because it's nature and great food and light hikes. And I would just check myself into a hotel and I just go to museums and go to ruins and eat great French food all the time. That sounds heavenly. That's what I would do. How about you, Kate?
Kate, you got 4 days. I'd go on vacation with my single besties. Actually, three of my really closest girlfriends are all single. They don't have kids. Not married. And it wouldn't be like a big, I think we go somewhere fun, like an urban place and just spend a lot of time reconnecting and having conversations that are not related to, so what kind of diaper are you using for your child? Because for me, that, not that, that those conversations can't be fun. They can be. No, just kidding. I think these three ladies know who they are. And we would just spend a lot of time reconnecting over faith, over our lives. And a lot of the big things that we used to talk about when we lived in Beijing together, that would be a really amazing away from kid 4 day trip. I know it's not alone, but honestly, I think I would enjoy this as much as if I were alone somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, your cup, you got to fill it and different things fill it. Right. So,
yep.
Well, you know, who knows? Maybe you can manifest that this year. Let's see.
All right. Always a pleasure. Join that Mile High Club, everybody, by not changing a diaper in the bathroom on the plane.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you found something helpful, reassuring, or interesting in this episode of Model Minority Moms. If you enjoyed the episode, please help us spread the word by texting a friend about our show or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to connect with us, please visit our website at modelminoritymoms.com or follow us on Instagram, where we love receiving messages from our listeners.